Is there gold in the village?
Her hands were red and sticky when Sandor dragged her off him. Enough, was all he said. He was bleeding like a butchered pig himself, and dragging one leg when he walked. There's one more, Arya reminded him. The squire had pulled the knife out of his belly and was trying to stop the blood with his hands. When the hound yanked him upright, he screamed and started to blubber like a baby.
Mercy, he wept. Please, don't kill me. Mother, have mercy.
Do I look like your bloody mother? The hound looked like nothing human. You killed this one too, he told Arya. Pricked him in his bowels. That's the end of him. He'll be a long time dying, though. The boy didn't seem to hear him.
I came for the girls, he whimpered. Make me a man, Polly said. Oh, God, please. Take me to a castle, a maester. Take me to a maester. My father's got gold. It was only for the girls. Mercy, sir.
The hound gave him a crack across the face that made him scream again. Don't call me sir. He turned back to Arya. This one is your she-wolf. You do it. She knew what he meant. Arya went to Pallava and knelt in his blood long enough to undo his sword belt. Hanging beside his dagger was a slimmer blade, too long to be a dirk, too short to be a man's sword, but it felt just right in her hand.
You remember where the heart is?
The hound asked. She nodded. The squire rolled his eyes.
Mercy!
Needle slipped between his ribs and gave it to him.
Good.
Sander's voice was thick with pain. If these three were hoarding here, Dragor must hold the fort as well as Arendelle. More of his pets could ride up any moment, and we've killed enough of the bloody buggers for one day.
Where will we go? She asked. Salt pans.
He put a big hand on her shoulder to keep from falling.
Get some wine, she-wolf, and take whatever coin they have as well. We'll need it. If there's ships at Salt Pans, we can reach the Vale by sea.
His mouth twitched at her as more blood ran down from where his ear had been.
Maybe Lady Lysa will marry you to a little rabbit. There's a match I'd like to see.
He started to laugh, then groaned instead. When the time came to leave, he needed Arya's help to get back up on Stranger. He had tied a strip of cloth about his neck and another around his thigh, and taken the squire's cloak off its peg by the door. The cloak was green, with a green arrow and a white bend, but when the hound wadded it up and pressed it to his ear, it soon turned red. Arya was afraid he would collapse the moment they set out, but somehow he stayed in the saddle. They could not risk meeting whoever held the Ruby Ford, so instead of following the King's Road, they angled south by east, through weedy fields, woods, and marshes. It was hours before they reached the banks of the Trident. The river had returned meekly to its accustomed channel, Arya saw. All its wet brown rage vanished with the rains. It's tired too, she thought. Close by the water's edge, they found some willows rising from a jumble of weathered rocks. Together, the rocks and trees formed a sort of natural fort where they could hide from both river and trail.
"Here will do," the hound said. "Water the horses and gather some dead wood for a fire."
When he dismounted, he had to catch himself on a tree limb to keep from falling.
"Won't the smoke be seen?
Anyone wants to find us, all they need to do is follow my blood. Water and wood. But bring me that wineskin first."
When he got the fire going, Sandor propped up his helm in the flames, emptied half the wineskin into it, and collapsed back against a jut of moss-covered stone, as if he never meant to rise again. He made Arya wash out the squire's cloak and cut it into strips. Those went into his helm as well.
"If I had more wine, I'd drink till I was dead to the world. Maybe I ought to send you back to that bloody inn for another skin or three."
"No," Arya said. "He wouldn't, would he? If he does, I'll just leave him and ride off." Sandor laughed at the fear on her face.
"A jest,
wolf girl, a bloody jest. Find me a stick, about so long, and not too big around, and wash the mud off it. I hate the taste of mud.
He didn't like the first two sticks she brought him. By the time she found one that suited him, the flames had scorched his dark snout black all the way to the eyes. Inside, the wine was boiling madly.
Get a cup for my bedroll and dip it half full, he told her. Be careful. You knock the damn thing over. I will send you back for more. Take the wine and pour it on my wounds. Think you can do that?
Arya nodded.
Then what are you waiting for? He growled.
Her knuckles brushed the steel the first time she filled the cup, burning her so badly she got blisters. Arya had to bite her lip to keep from screaming. The hound used the stick for the same purpose, clamming it between his teeth as she poured. She did the gash in his thigh first, then the shallower cut on the back of his neck. Sandor coiled his right hand into a fist and beat against the ground when she did his leg. When it came to his neck, he bit the stick so hard it broke, and she had to find a new one. She could see the terror in his eyes.
Turn your head!
She trickled the wine down over the raw red flesh where his ear had been, and fingers of brown blood and red wine crept over his jaw. He did scream then, despite the stick. Then he passed out from the pain. Arya figured the rest out by herself. She fished the strips they'd made of the squire's cloak out of the bottom of the helm and used them to bind the cuts. When she came to his ear, she had to wrap up half his head to stop the bleeding. By then, dusk was settling over the trident. She let the horses graze, then hobbled them for the night, and made herself as comfortable as she could in a niche between two rocks. The fire burned a while and died. Arya watched the moon through the branches overhead.
Sir Gregor the Mountain, she said softly. Dunson, Raff the Sweetling, Sir Ilion, Sir Mirren, Queen Cersei.
It made her feel queer to leave out Polybor and the Tickler, and Joffrey too. She was glad he was dead, but she wished she could have been there to see him die, or maybe kill him herself.
Polybor said that Sansa killed him and the imp.
Could that be true?
The imp was a Lannister, and Sansa... I wish I could change into a wolf and grow wings and fly away.
If Sansa was gone too, there were no more Starks but her. John was on the wall 1,000 leagues away, but he was a Snow, and these different aunts and uncles the Hound wanted to sell her to, they weren't Starks either. They weren't wolves. Sandor moaned, and she rolled onto her side to look at him. She had left his name out too, she realized. Why had she done that? She tried to think of Micah, but it was hard to remember what he'd looked like. She hadn't known him long. All he ever did was play at swords with me. The Hound, she whispered, and Velar Morghulis. Maybe he'd be dead by morning. But when the pale dawn light came filtering through the trees, it was him who woke her with the toe of his boot. She had dreamed she was a wolf again, chasing a riderless horse up a hill with a pack behind her. But his foot brought her back, just as they were closing for the kill. The Hound was still weak, every movement slow and clumsy. He slumped in the saddle and sweated, and his ear began to bleed through the bandage. He needed all his strength just to keep from falling off Stranger. Had the Mountain's men come hunting them, she doubted if he would even be able to lift a sword. Arya glanced over her shoulder, but there was nothing behind them but a crow flitting from tree to tree. The only sound was the river. Long before noon, Sandor Clegane was reeling. There were hours of daylight still remaining when he called a halt.
I need... to rest, was all he said.
This time, when he dismounted, he did fall. Instead of trying to get back up, he crawled weakly under a tree and leaned up against the trunk.
Bloody hell, he cursed. Bloody hell.
When he saw Arya staring at him, he said,
I'd skin you alive for a cup of wine, girl.
She brought him water instead. He drank a little of it, complained it tasted of mud, and slid into a noisy, fevered sleep. When she touched him, his skin was burning up. Arya sniffed at his bandages the way Maester Lewin had done sometimes when treating her cut or scrape. His face had bled the worst, but it was the wound on his thigh that smelt funny to her. She wondered how far this salt pans was, and whether she could find it by herself. I wouldn't have to kill him. If I just rode off and left him, he'd die all by himself. He'll die of fever, and lie there beneath a tree until the end of days. But maybe it would be better if she killed him herself. She had killed the squire at the inn, and he hadn't done anything except grab her arm. The hound had killed Micah. Micah and more. Betty's killed 100 Micahs. He probably would have killed her too, if not for the ransom. Needle glinted as she drew it. Bolivar had kept it nice and sharp, at least. She turned her body sideways in a water dancer's stance without even thinking about it. Dead leaves crunched beneath her feet. Quick as a snake, she thought. Smooth as summer silk. His eyes opened.
"You remember where the art is?"
he asked in a hoarse whisper. As still as stone she stood. I was only...
"Don't lie," he growled. "I hate liars. I hate gutless frauds even worse. Go on, do it."
When Arya did not move, he said,
"I killed your butcher's boy. I cut him near in half, and laughed about it after."
He made a queer sound, and it took her a moment to realize he was sobbing.
"And the little bird, your pretty sister, I stood there in my white cloak and let them beat her. I took the bloody song, she never gave it. I meant to take her too, I should have fucked her bloody and ripped her out before leaving her for that dwarf."
A spasm of pain twisted his face.
"Do you mean to make me beg, bitch? Do it! The gift of mercy! Avenge a little Michael!"
"Micah!" Arya stepped away from him. "You don't deserve the gift of mercy." The hound watched her saddle Craven through eyes bright with fever. Not once did he attempt to rise and stop her, but when she mounted, he said, "A real wolf would finish a wounded animal." "Maybe some real wolves will find you," Arya thought. "Maybe they'll smell you when the sun goes down." Then he would learn what wolves did to dogs. "You shouldn't have hit me with that axe," she said. "You should have saved my mother." She turned her horse and rode away from him and never looked back once. On a bright morning, 6 days later, she came to a place where the trident began to widen out and the air smelled more of salt than trees. She stayed close to the water, passing fields and farms, and a little after midday a town appeared before her. Salt pans, she hoped. A small castle dominated the town, no more than a holdfast, really, a single tall square keep with a bailey and a curtain wall. Most of the shops and inns and alehouses around the harbour had been plundered or burned, though some looked still inhabited. But the port was there, and eastward spread the Bay of Crabs, its waters shimmering blue and green in the sun. And there were ships. "Three," Arya thought. "There are three." Two were only river galleys, shallow draft boats made to ply the waters of the Trident. The third was bigger, a salt sea trader, with two banks of oars, a gilded prow, and three tall masts with furled purple sails. Her hull was painted purple, too. Arya rode Craven down to the docks to get a better look. Strangers are not so strange in a port as they are in little villages, and no one seemed to care who she was or why she was here. "I need silver." The realization made her bite her lip. They had found a stag and a dozen coppers on Polliver, 8 silvers on the pimply squire she'd killed, and only a couple of pennies in the tickler's purse. But the hound had told her to pull off his boots and slice open his blood-drenched clothes, and she'd turned up a stag in each toe and three golden dragons sewn in the lining of his jerkin. Sander had kept it all, though. That wasn't fair. It was mine as much as his. If she had given him the gift of mercy... She hadn't, though. She couldn't go back, no more than she could beg for help. Begging for help never gets you any. She would have to sell Craven and hope she brought enough. The stable had been burned, she learned from a boy by the docks. But the woman who'd owned it was still trading behind the sept. Arya found her easily, a big, robust woman with a good horsey smell to her. She liked Craven at first look, asked Arya how she'd come by her, and grinned at her answer.
"She's a well-bred horse, that's plain enough, but I don't doubt she belonged to a knight, sweetling," she said. "But the knight was no dead brother of yours. I've been dealing with a castle there many a year, so I know what gentle-born folk is like. This mare is well-bred, but you're not."
She poked a finger at Arya's chest.
"Found her, or stole her, never mind which. That's how it was. Only way a scruffy little thing like you comes to ride a palfrey."
Arya bit her lip. "Does that mean you won't buy her?" The woman chuckled.
"It means you'll take what I give you, sweetling. Else we go down to the castle, and maybe you'll get nothing. Or even hanged for stealing some good knight's horse."
A half dozen other Salt Pans folk were around, going about their business, so Arya knew she couldn't kill the woman. Instead, she had to bite her lip and let herself be cheated. The purse she got was pitifully flat, and when she asked for more, for the saddle and bridle and blanket, the woman just laughed at her. She would never have cheated the hound, she thought, during the long walk back to the docks. The distance seemed to have grown by miles since she'd ridden it. The purple galley was still there. If the ship had sailed while she was being robbed, that would have been too much to bear. A cask of mead was being rolled up the plank when she arrived. When she tried to follow, a sailor up on deck shouted down at her in a tongue she did not know. "I want to see the captain," Arya told him. He only shouted louder, but the commotion drew the attention of a stout grey-haired man in a coat of purple wool, and he spoke the common tongue.
"I am captain here," he said. "What is your wish? Be quick, child, we have a tide to catch."
"I want to go north, to the wall. Here I can pay." She gave him the purse. "The Night's Watch has a castle on the sea."
"East Watch."
The captain spilled out the silver onto his palm and frowned.
"Is this all you have?"
"It is not enough," Arya knew without being told. She could see it on his face.
"I wouldn't need a cabin or anything," she said. "I could sleep down in the hold or—"
"Take her on as cabin girl," said a passing oarsman, a bolt of wool over one shoulder.
"She can sleep with me."
"Mind your tongue," the captain snapped.
"I could work," said Arya. "I could scrub the decks. I scrubbed a castle steps once, or I could row."
"No," he said, "you couldn't."
He gave her back the coins.
"It would make no difference if you could, child. The North has nothing for us. Ice and war and pirates. We saw a dozen pirate ships making north as we rounded Crackclaw Point, and I have no wish to meet them again. From here, we bend our oars for home, and I suggest you do the same."
"I have no home," Arya thought. "I have no pack, and now I don't even have a horse." The captain was turning away when she said,
"What ship is this, my lord?"
He paused long enough to give her a weary smile.
"This is the Galleus, Titan's daughter, of the free city of Braavos."
"Wait," Arya said suddenly, "I have something else." She had stuffed it down inside her small clothes to keep it safe, so she had to dig deep to find it, while the oarsman laughed and the captain lingered with obvious impatience.
"One more silver will make no difference, child," he finally said.
"It's not silver." Her fingers closed on it. "It's iron. Here." She pressed it into his hand. The small black iron coin that Jaqen H'ghar had given her. So worn, the man whose head it bore had no features. "It's probably worthless, but..." The captain turned it over and blinked at it, then looked at her again.
"This... how..."
Jaqen said to say the words, too. Arya crossed her arms against her chest. "Velar Morghulis," she said, as loud as if she'd known what it meant.
"Velar Doheris," he replied, touching his brow with two fingers. "Of course you shall have a cabin."
Samwell.
"He sucks harder than mine."
Gilly stroked the babe's head as she held him to her nipple.
"He's hungry," said the blonde woman, Val, the one the Black Brothers called the Wildling Princess. "He's lived on goat's milk up to now, and potions from that blind maester."
The boy did not have a name yet, no more than Gillies did. That was the Wildling way. Not even Mance Raider's son would get a name till his third year, it would seem, though Sam had heard the brothers calling him the Little Prince and born in battle. He watched the child nurse at Gilly's breast, and then he watched John watch.
"John is smiling."
A sad smile still, but definitely a smile of sorts. Sam was glad to see it.
"It is the first time I've seen him smile since I got back."
They had walked from the Night Fort to Deep Lake, and from Deep Lake to Queensgate, following a narrow track from one castle to the next, never out of sight of the wall. A day and a half from Castle Black, as they trudged along on calloused feet, Gilly heard horses behind them, and turned to see a column of black riders coming from the west.
"My brothers," Sam assured her. "No one uses this road but the Night's Watch."
It had turned out to be Sir Denis Mallister, from the Shadow Tower, along with the wounded Bowen Marsh and the survivors from the fight at the Bridge of Skulls. When Sam saw Dywin, Giant, and Dolorous Ed Tullet, he broke down and wept. It was from them that he learned about the battle beneath the wall.
"Stannis landed his knights at East Watch, and Cutter Pike led him along the Ranger's Roads to take the Wildlings unawares," Giant told him. "He smashed them. Mance Raider was taken captive, 1,000 of his best slain, including Harmer Dogshead. The rest scattered like leaves before a storm, we heard." "The guards are good," Sam thought.
If he had not gotten lost as he made his way south from Craster's Keep, he and Gilly might have walked right into the battle, or into Mance Raider's camp at the very least. That might have been well enough for Gilly and the boy, but not for him. Sam had heard all the stories about what wildlings did with captured crows. He shuddered. Nothing that his brothers told him prepared him for what he found at Castle Black, however. The common hall had burned to the ground, and the great wooden stair was a mound of broken ice and scorched timbers. Donald Noy was dead, along with Rast, Deaf Dick, Red Allen, and so many more, yet the castle was more crowded than Sam had ever seen. Not with black brothers, but with the king's soldiers, more than 1,000 of them. There was a king in the king's tower for the first time in living memory, and banners flew from the Lance, Harden's Tower, the Grey Keep, the Shield Hall, and other buildings that had stood empty and abandoned for long years.
"The big one, the gold with the black stag, that's a royal standard of House Baratheon," he told Gilly, who had never seen banners before. "The fox and flowers is House Florent, the turtle is Estermont, the swordfish is Bar Eamon, and the cross trumpets are for Wensington." "They're all bright as flowers," Gilly pointed. "I like those yellow ones with the fire. Look, and some of the fighters have the same thing on their blouses." "A fiery art. I don't know whose sigil that is."
He found out soon enough.
"Cool, Queen's men,"
Pip told him, after he let out a whoop and shouted,
"Run and bar the doors, lads. It's Sam the Slayer. Come back from the grave."
While Gren was hugging Sam so hard, he thought his ribs might break. "But best you don't go asking where the Queen is. Stannis left her at Eastwatch with her daughter and his fleet. He brought no woman but the Red One."
"The Red One?" said Sam uncertainly.
"Melisandre of Ashoi," said Gren, "the King's sorceress. They say she burned a man alive at Dragonstone, so Stannis would have favourable winds for his voyage north. She rode beside him in the battle, too, and gave him his magic sword, Lightbringer, they call it. Wait till you see it. It glows like it had a piece of sun inside it."
He looked at Sam again and grinned a big, helpless, stupid grin.
"Oh, I still can't believe you're here."
Jon Snow had smiled to see him too, but it was a tired smile, like the one he wore now. "You made it back after all," he said, "and brought Gilly out as well. You've done well, Sam." Jon had done more than well himself, to hear Gren tell it, yet even capturing the Horn of Winter and a wildling prince had not been enough for Sir Alistair Thorne and his friends, who still named him Turncloak. Though Maester Aemon said his wound was healing well, Jon bore other scars, deeper than the ones around his eye.
"He grieves for his wildling girl, and for his brothers."
"It's strange," he said to Sam. "Craster had no love for Mance, nor Mance for Craster, but now Craster's daughter is feeding Mance's son."
"I have the milk," Gilly said, her voice soft and shy. "Mine only takes a little. He's not so greedy as this one."
The wildling woman Val turned to face them.
"I've heard the Queen's men saying that the Red Woman means to give Mance to the fire as soon as he's strong enough."
Jon gave her a weary look. "Mance is a deserter from the Night's Watch. The penalty for that is death. If the Watch had taken him, he would have been hanged by now. But he's the King's captive, and no one knows the King's mind but the Red Woman."
"I want to see him," Val said. "I want to show him his son. He deserves that much before you kill him."
Sam tried to explain.
"No one is permitted to see him but Maester Aemon, my lady."
"If it were in my power, Mance could hold his son." John's smile was gone. "I'm sorry, Val." He turned away. "Sam and I have duties to return to. Well, Sam does anyway. We'll ask about your seeing Mance. That's all I can promise." Sam lingered long enough to give Gilly's hand a squeeze and promised to return again after supper. Then he hurried after. There were guards outside the door, Queen's men with spears. Jon was halfway down the steps, but he waited when he heard Sam puffing after him. "You're more than fond of Gilly, aren't you?" Sam reddened.
"Gilly's good. She's good and kind."
He was glad that his long nightmare was done, glad to be back with his brothers at Castle Black. But some nights, alone in his cell, he thought of how warm Gilly had been when they curled up beneath the firs with a babe between them.
She made me braver, Jon. Not brave, but braver."
"You know you cannot keep her," Jon said gently. "No more than I could stay with Ygritte. You said the word, Sam, the same as I did, the same as all of us."
"I know. Gilly said she'd be a wife to me, but I told her about the words and what they meant. I don't know if that made her sad or glad, but I told her."
He swallowed nervously and said,
"Jon, could there be honour in a lie if it were told for a good purpose?"
"It would depend on the lie and the purpose, I suppose." Jon looked at Sam. "I wouldn't advise it. You're not made to lie, Sam. You blush and squeak and stammer."
"I do," said Sam, "but I could lie in a letter. I'm better with a quill in hand. I had a thought. When things are more settled here, I thought maybe the best thing for Gilly, I thought I might send her to Horn Hill, to my mother and sisters and my father. If Gilly were to say the babe was mine,
he was blushing again,
my mother would want him, I know. She would find some place for Gilly, some kind of service. It wouldn't be as hard as serving Crester. And Lord Randolph, he would never say so, but he might be pleased to believe I got a bastard on some wildling girl. At least it would prove I was man enough to lie with a woman and father a child. He told me once that I was sure to die a maiden, that no woman would ever, you know. John, if I did this, wrote this lie, would that be a good thing? The life the boy would have?
Growing up a bastard in his grandfather's castle? John shrugged. That depends in great part on your father and what sort of boy this is. If he takes after you...
He won't. Craster's his real father. You saw him. He was hard as an old tree stump, and Gilly is stronger than she looks.
If the boy shows any skill with sword or lance, he should have a place with your father's household guard at the least, John said. It's not unknown for bastards to be trained as squires and raised to knighthood. But you'd best be sure Gilly can play this game convincingly. From what you've told me of Lord Randall, I doubt he would take kindly to being deceived. More guards were posted on the steps outside the tower. These were king's men, though. Sam had quickly learned the difference. The king's men were as earthy and impious as any other soldiers, but the queen's men were fervid in their devotion to Melisande of Achailly and her Lord of Light.
"Are you going to the practice yard again?"
Sam asked as they crossed the yard.
"Is it wise to train so hard before your leg's done healing?"
John shrugged. "What else is there for me to do? Marsh has removed me from duty for fear that I'm still a turncloak."
"It's only a few who believe that," Sam assured him. "Sir Alistair and his friends. Most of the brothers know better. King Stannis knows as well, I'll wager. You brought in the Horn of Winter and captured Mance Raider's son."
"All I did was protect Val and the babe against Lutus when the wildlings fled, and keep them there until the rangers found us. I never captured anyone. King Stannis keeps his men well in hand, that's plain. He lets them plunder some, but I've only heard of 3 wilding women being raped, and the men who did it have all been gelded. I suppose I should have been killing the free folk as they ran. Sir Alistair has been putting it about that the only time I bared my sword was to defend our foes. I failed to kill Mance Raider because I was in league with him, he says.
That's only Sir Alistair, Sam said. Everyone knows the sort of man he is.
With his noble birth, his knighthood, and his long years in the watch, Sir Alistair Thorne might have been a strong challenger for the Lord Commander's title. But almost all the men he'd trained during his years as master-at-arms despised him. His name had been offered, of course, but after running a weak 6th on the first day and actually losing votes on the 2nd, Thorne had withdrawn to support Lord Janus Slint. What everyone knows is that Sir Alistair is a knight from a noble line and true-born, while I am the bastard who killed Curran Halfhand and bedded with a spearwife. The Warg, I've heard them call me. How can I be a Warg without a wolf, I ask you? His mouth twisted. I don't even dream of ghosts anymore. All my dreams are of the crypts of the stone kings on their thrones. Sometimes I hear Rob's voice and my father's, as if they were at a feast. But there's a wall between us, and I know that no place has been set for me.
The living have no place at the feasts of the dead.
It tore the heart from Sam to hold his silence then.
Bran's not dead, John,
he wanted to say.
He's with friends, and they're going north on a giant elk to find a 3-eyed crow in the depths of the haunted forest.
It sounded so mad that there were times Sam Tarly thought he must have dreamt it all, conjured it whole from fever and fear and hunger. But he would have blurted it out anyway, if he had not given his word. Three times he had sworn to keep the secret, once to Bran himself, once to that strange boy, Jojen Reed, and last of all to Cold Hands.
"The world believes a boy is dead," his rescuer had said as they parted. "Let his bones lie undisturbed. We want no seekers coming after us. Swear it, Samwell of the Night's Watch, swear it, for the life you owe me."
Miserable, Sam shifted his weight and said,
"Lord Janus will never be chosen Lord Commander."
It was the best comfort he had to offer John, the only comfort.
"That won't happen."
"Sam, you're a sweet fool. Open your eyes. It's been happening for days." John pushed his hair back out of his eyes and said, "I may know nothing, but I know that. Now pray excuse me, I need to hit someone very hard with a sword." There was naught that Sam could do but watch him stride off toward the armory and the practice yard. That was where Jon Snow spent most of his waking hours. With Sir Andrew dead and Sir Alistair disinterested, Castle Black had no master at arms, so Jon had taken it on himself to work with some of the rawer recruits, Satin, Horse, Hop Robin with his clubfoot, Aaron, and Emric. And when they had duties, he would train alone for hours with sword and shield and spear, or match himself against anyone who cared to take him on.
"Sam, you're a sweet fool," he could hear John saying, all the way back to the Maester's Keep. "Open your eyes. It's been happening for days."
Could he be right? A man needed the votes of 2/3 of the sworn brothers to become the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, and after 9 days and 9 votes, no one was even close to that. Lord Janus had been gaining, true, creeping up past first Burnmarsh and then Othel Yarwick, but he was still well behind Sir Dennis Malister of the Shadow Tower and Cutter Pike of Eastwatch by the Sea.
"One of them will be the new Lord Commander, surely," Sam told himself.
Stannis had posted guards outside the Maester's door, too. Within, the rooms were hot and crowded with the wounded from the battle. Black brothers, kingsmen, and queensmen, all three. Clydes was shuffling amongst them with flagons of goat's milk and dream wine. But Maester Aemon had not yet returned from his morning call on Mance Rayder. Sam hung his cloak on a peg and went to lend a hand. But even as he fetched and poured and changed dressings, John's words nagged at him.
"Sam, you're a sweet fool. Open your eyes. It's been happening for days."
It was a good hour before he could excuse himself to feed the ravens. On the way up to the rookery, he stopped to check the tally he had made of last night's count. At the start of the choosing, more than 30 names had been offered, but most of them had withdrawn once it became clear they could not win. 7 remained as of last night. Sir Dennis Malister had collected 213 tokens, Cutter Pike 187, Lord Slint 74, Othel Yarwick 60, Burnmarsh 49, Three Finger Hub 5, and Dolores Ed Tullet 1.
"Pip and his stupid japes."
Sam shuffled through the earlier counts. Sir Dennis, Cutter Pike, and Burnmarsh had all been falling since the third day. Othel Yarwick since the sixth. Only Lord Janus Slint was climbing, day after day after day. He could hear the birds quawking in the rookery, so he put the papers away and climbed the steps to feed them. 3 more ravens had come in, he saw with pleasure.
"Snow!"
they cried at him.
"Snow! Snow! Snow!"
He had taught them that. Even with the newcomers, the ravenry seemed dismally empty. Few of the birds that Aemon had sent off had returned as yet.
"One reached Stannis, though. One found Dragonstone and a king who still cared."
1,000 leagues south, Sam knew, his father had joined House Tarly to the cause of the boy on the Iron Throne, but neither King Joffrey nor little King Tommen had bestirred himself when the watch cried out for help.
"What good is a king who will not defend his realm?"
he thought angrily, remembering the night on the Fist of the First Men
and the terrible trek to Crastus Keep through darkness, fear, and falling snow. The Queen's men made him uneasy, it was true, but at least they had come. That night at supper, Sam looked for Jon Snow, but he did not see him anywhere in the cavernous stone vault where his brothers now took their meals. He finally took a place on the bench near his other friends. Pip was telling Dolorous Ed about the contest they'd had to see which of the straw soldiers could collect the most wilding arrows.
"You were leading most of the way, but Wat of Longlake got 3 in the last day and passed you."
"Cor, I never win anything, eh?"
Dolorous Ed complained.
"The gods always smiled on Wat, though, eh? When the wildlings knocked him off the Bridge of Skulls, somehow, he landed in a nice deep pool of water, eh? How lucky was that, missing all those rocks, eh?"
"Was it a long fall?" Gren wanted to know. "Did landing in the pool of water save his life?"
"No," said Dolorous Ed. "He was dead already, eh? From the axe in his head. Still, it was pretty lucky, eh? Missing the rocks."
Three Finger Hub had promised the brothers roast haunch of mammoth that night, maybe in hopes of cadging a few more votes.
"If that was his notion, he should have found a younger mammoth," Sam thought, as he pulled a string of gristle out from between his teeth.
Sighing, he pushed the food away. There would be another vote shortly, and the tensions in the air were thicker than the smoke. Cutter Pike sat by the fire, surrounded by rangers from East Watch. Sir Dennis Mallister was near the door with a smaller group of Shadow Tower men.
"Jaina Slint has the best place," Sam realized, "halfway between the flames and the drafts."
He was alarmed to see Bowen Marsh beside him, wan-faced and haggard, his head still wrapped in linen, but listening to all that Lord Jaina had to say. When he pointed that out to his friends, Pip said,
"And look down there. That's Sir Alistair whispering with Uthul Yarwick."
After the meal, Maester Aemon rose to ask if any of the brothers wished to speak before they cast their tokens. Dolorous Ed got up, stone-faced and glum as ever.
"Cor, I just want to say, to whoever is voting for me, that I would certainly make an awful Lord Commander, eh? But, Cor, so would all these others, eh?"
He was followed by Bowen Marsh, who stood with one hand on Lord Slint's shoulder. "Brothers and friends, I'm asking that my name be withdrawn from this choosing. My wound still troubles me, and the task is too large for me, I fear. But not for Lord Janus here, who commanded the Gold Cloaks at King's Landing for many years. Let us all give him our support." Sam heard angry mutters from Cutter Pike's end of the room, and Sir Dennis looked at one of his companions and shook his head.
"It's too late. The damage is done."
He wondered where John was and why he had stayed away. Most of the brothers were unlettered, so by tradition the choosing was done by dropping tokens into a big pot-bellied iron kettle that Three Finger Hub and Owen the Oaf had dragged over from the kitchens. The barrels of tokens were off in a corner behind a heavy drape, so the voters could make their choice unseen. You were allowed to have a friend cast your token if you had duty. So some men took 2 tokens, 3 or 4, and Sir Dennis and Cutter Pike voted for the garrisons they had left behind. When the hall was finally empty, save for them, Sam and Clydes upended the kettle in front of Maester Aemon. A cascade of seashells, stones, and copper pennies covered the table. Aemon's wrinkled hands sorted with surprising speed, moving the shells here, the stones there, the pennies to one side, the occasional arrowhead, nail, and acorn off to themselves. Sam and Clytus counted the piles, each of them keeping his own tally. Tonight it was Sam's turn to give his results first.
203 for Sir Dennis Mallister, he said. 169 for Cutter Pike. 137 for Lord Janus Slint, 72 for Uthul Yarwick, 5 for Three Finger Hob, and 2 for Dolorous Ed. I had 168 for Pike, Clyda said. We are 2 votes short by my count, and 1 by Sam's.
Sam's count is correct, said Maester Aemon. John Snow did not cast a token. It makes no matter. No one is close.
Sam was more relieved than disappointed. Even with Bowen Marsh's support, Lord Janus was still only 3rd.
Who are these 5 who keep voting for 3-finger hub? He wondered. Brothers who want him out of the kitchens, said Clydes. Sir Dennis is down 10 votes since yesterday, Sam pointed out, and Cutter Pike is down almost 20. That's not good.
Not good for their hopes of becoming Lord Commander, certainly, said Maester Aemon. Yet it may be good for the Night's Watch in the end. That is not for us to say. 10 days is not unduly long. There was once a choosing that lasted nearly 2 years, some 700 votes. The brothers will come to a decision in their own time.
Yes, Sam thought, but what decision?
Later, over cups of watered wine, in the privacy of Pip's cell, Sam's tongue loosened, and he found himself thinking aloud.
Cutter Pike and Sir Dennis Mallister have been losing ground, but between them they still have almost 2/3, he told Pip and Gren. Either one would be fine as Lord Commander. Someone needs to convince one of them to withdraw and support the other.
Someone? Said Gren, doubtfully. What someone?
Gren is so dumb he thinks someone might be him, said Pip. Maybe when someone is done with Pike and Mallister, he should convince King Stannis to marry Queen Cersei, too.
King Stannis is married, Gren objected.
What am I going to do with him, Sam? Sighed Pip.
Cutter Pike and Sir Dennis don't like each other much, Gren argued stubbornly. They fight about everything.
Yes, but only because they have different ideas about what's best for the Watch, said Sam. If we explained...
We, said Pip. How did someone change to we? I'm the mama's monkey, remember? And Gren is, well, Gren.
He smiled at Sam and wiggled his ears. You now, you're a lord's son, and the Maester Stuart.
And Sam the Slayer, said Gren. You slew another. It was the dragon glass that killed it, Sam told him for the 100th time.
A lord's son, the Maester Stuart, and Sam the Slayer, Pip mused. You could talk to them. Might be.
I could, said Sam,
sounding as gloomy as Dolorous Ed.
If I wasn't too craven to face them.
John prowled around Satin, in a slow circle, sword in hand, forcing him to turn.
Get your shield up, he said.
It's too heavy, the old town boy complained.
It's as heavy as it needs to be to stop a sword, John said. Now get it up.
He stepped forward, slashing. Saturn jerked the shield up in time to catch the sword on its rim and swung his own blade at John's ribs.
Good, John said, when he felt the impact on his own shield. That was good, but you need to put your body into it. Get your weight behind the steel, and you'll do more damage than with your arm strength alone. Come, try it again. Drive at me. But keep the shield up, or I'll ring your head like a bell.
Instead, Saturn took a step backward and raised his visor.
John? He said, in an anxious voice.
When he turned, she was standing behind him, with 6 Queen's men around her. Small wonder the yard grew so quiet. He had glimpsed Melisande at her night fires, and coming and going about the castle, but never so close. She's beautiful, he thought. But there was something more than a little unsettling about red eyes.
My lady?
The king would speak with you, John Snow.
John thrust the practice sword into the earth. Might I be allowed to change? I am in no fit state to stand before a king.
"'We shall await you atop the wall,' said Melisande.
"'We?' John heard. "'Not he?'
"'It's as they say. "'This is his true queen, not the one he left at Eastwatch.' "'He hung his mail and plate inside the armory, "'returned to his own cell, discarded his sweat-stained clothes, "'and donned a fresh set of blacks. "'It would be cold and windy in the cage, he knew, "'and colder and windier still, on top of the ice, "'so he chose a heavy hooded cloak. "'Last of all, he collected Longclaw, "'and slung the bastard sword across his back. "'Melisande was waiting for him at the base of the wall. "'She had sent her queen's men away. "'What does His Grace want of me?' "'John asked her as they entered the cage.
"'All you have to give, Jon Snow, he is a king.'
"'He shut the door and pulled the bell cord. "'The winch began to turn. "'They rose. "'The day was bright, and the wall was weeping. "'Long fingers of water trickling down its face and glinting in the sun. "'In the close confines of the iron cage, "'he was acutely aware of the red woman's presence. "'She even smells red. "'The scent reminded him of Micken's Forge, "'of the way iron smelled when red hot. "'The scent was smoke and blood.
"'Kissed by fire,' he thought, remembering Ygritte.
The wind got in amongst Melisande's long red robes and sent them flapping against John's legs as he stood beside her. "'You're not cold, my lady?' he asked. She laughed.
"'Never.'
The ruby at her throat seemed to pulse in time with the beating of her heart.
"'The Lord's fire lives within me, Jon Snow. Feel.'
She put a hand on his cheek and held it there while he felt how warm she was.
"'That is how life should feel,'
she told him.
"'Only death is cold.'
They found Stannis Baratheon standing alone at the edge of the wall, brooding over the field where he had won his battle, and the great green forest beyond. He was dressed in the same black breeches, tunic, and boots that a brother of the Night's Watch might wear. Only his cloak set him apart. A heavy gold cloak trimmed in black fur and pinned with a brooch in the shape of a flaming heart.
"'I have brought you the bastard of Winterfell, Your Grace,' said Melisande.
Stannis turned to study him. Beneath his heavy brow were eyes like bottomless blue pools. His hollow cheeks and strong jaw were covered with a short-cropped blue-black beard that did little to conceal the gauntness of his face. And his teeth were clenched. His neck and shoulders were clenched as well, and his right hand. John found himself remembering something Donald Noy once said about the Baratheon brothers. Robert was the true steel, Stannis is pure iron, black and hard and strong, but brittle, the way iron gets. He'll break before he bends. Uneasily, he knelt, wondering why this brittle king had need of him. "'Rise. I've heard much and more of you, Lord Snow. "'I am no lord, sire.' John rose. "'I know what you have heard, that I am a turncloak and craven, "'that I slew my brother Corran Halfhand so the wildlings would spare my life, "'that I rode with Mance Rayder and took a wildling wife. "'Aye, all that and more. "'You're a warg, too, they say, a skin-changer.' "'Who walks at night as a wolf?' "'King Stannis had a hard smile. "'How much of it is true? "'I had a direwolf, Ghost. "'I left him when I climbed the wall near Greyguard, "'and have not seen him since. "'Corran Halfhand commanded me to join the wildlings. "'He knew they would make me kill him to prove myself "'and told me to do whatever they asked of me. "'The woman was named Ygritte.' I broke my vows with her, but I swear to you, on my father's name, that I never turned my cloak.
I believe you, the king said.
That startled him.
Why?
Stannis snorted. Ah! I know Janus Slint, and I knew Ned Stark as well. Your father was no friend of mine, but only a fool would doubt his honour or his honesty. You have his look. A big man, Stannis Baratheon, towered over John, but he was so gaunt that he looked 10 years older than he was. "I know more than you might think, Jon Snow. I know it was you who found the dragonglass dagger that Randall Tarly's son used to slay the other. Ghost found it. The blade was wrapped in a ranger's cloak and buried beneath the fist of the first men. There were other blades as well, spearheads, arrowheads, all dragonglass. I know you held the gate here, King Stannis said. If not, I would have come too late. Donald Noy held the gate. He died below in the tunnel, fighting the King of the Giants. Stannis grimaced. Noy made my first sword for me, and Robert's warhammer as well. Had the guards seen fit to spare him, he would have made a better Lord Commander for your order than any of these fools who are squabbling over it now. Cotter Pike and Sir Dennis Mallister are no fools, sire, John said. They're good men and capable. Uthul Yarvik as well, in his own way. Lord Mormont trusted each of them. Your Lord Mormont trusted too easily, else he would not have died as he did. But we were speaking of you. I have not forgotten that it was you who brought us this magic horn and captured Mance Rayder's wife and son. Darla died. John was saddened by that still. Val is her sister. She and the babe did not require much capturing, Your Grace. You had put the wildlings to flight, and the skin changer, Mance had left to guard his queen, went mad when the eagle burned. John looked at Melisande. Some say that was your doing. She smiled, her long copper hair tumbling across her face.
The Lord of Light has fiery talons, Jon Snow.
John nodded and turned back to the king. Your Grace, you spoke of Val. She has asked to see Mance Rayder to bring his son to him. It would be a kindness.
The man is a deserter from your order. Your brothers are all insisting on his death. Why should I do him a kindness?
John had no answer for that. If not for him, for Val, for her sister's sake, the child's mother.
You are fond of this Val?
I scarcely know her.
They tell me she is comely.
Very, John admitted.
Beauty can be treacherous. My brother learned that lesson from Cersei Lannister. She murdered him, do not doubt it. Your father and John Aaron as well. He scowled. You rode with these wildlings. Is there any honour in them, do you think?
Yes, John said. But their own sort of honour, sire.
In Mance Rayder?
Yes, I think so.
In the Lord of Bones?
John hesitated. Rattleshirt, we called him. Treacherous and bloodthirsty. If there's honour in him, he hides it down beneath his suit of bones.
And this other man, this Tormund of the many names who eluded us after the battle, answer me truly.
Tormund Giantsbane seemed to me the sort of man who would make a good friend and a bad enemy, Your Grace. Stannis gave a curt nod.
Your father was a man of honour. He was no friend to me, but I saw his worth. Your brother was a rebel and a traitor who meant to steal half my kingdom, but no man can question his courage. What of you?
Does he want me to say I love him?
John's voice was stiff and formal as he said, I am a man of the Night's Watch.
Words, words of wind. Why do you think I abandoned Dragonstone and sailed to the wall, Lord Snow?
I am no lord, sire. You came because we sent for you, I hope, though I could not say why you took so long about it. Surprisingly, Stannis smiled at that.
You're bold enough to be a Stark. Yes, I should have come sooner. If not for my hand, I might not have come at all. Lord Seaworth is a man of humble birth, but he reminded me of my duty, when all I could think of was my rights. I had the cart before the horse, Davos said. I was trying to win the throne to save the kingdom, when I should have been trying to save the kingdom to win the throne.
Stannis pointed north.
There is where I'll find the foe that I was born to fight.
His name may not be spoken, Melisande added softly.
He is the god of night and terror, Jon Snow, and these shapes in the snow are his creatures.